Welcome back to the Book of Psalms. Psalm 22 is a lament written by David, and it's like nothing else in the whole Bible. But then again, it's a great deal like something else in the Bible, a connection that is almost stunning. Read with me in verse 1. My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? David is hurting. He cries out to God in anguish. Why have you forsaken me? David lived a hard life, and though you and I both know God's promise to never leave or forsake us, David is feeling forsaken. Another reminder that wrong feelings are still real feelings, and the Psalms give us a language to process them with the Lord. But there's something different here. Scholars like to place David's Psalms within his story, but this one is a conundrum. The language is vivid, but it describes something David never endured. Pierced hands and feet. And did you recognize that first sentence? My God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus said it 1,000 years later on the cross. Jesus quoted this psalm and cried it out to his Father from the very anguish of crucifixion. What's going on here? As before, we'll follow three steps as we read. What it meant to the writer, then to Jesus, then ourselves. Applying to David is a challenge because it isn't David's experience. I'm sure he was going through something, but his words are a graphic description of the feelings of crucifixion. That won't be invented for another 500 years. While wrestling with his own trials, I believe that David has a vision so vivid, so powerful, that it grabs a hold of him. He experiences it personally, feels it, and he fights to understand. Why, God? Why this? So as we step into the psalm, we also step into the vision and experience it with David and ask with him, why, Lord? And that will carry us directly into step 2. What did it mean to Jesus? Psalm 22 is a unique opportunity to connect with Jesus on the God-forsaken cross that saved our very souls. Then step 3, for us. The cross was for us. He considered you worth it. But why, Lord? Why did it come to this? That is precisely what David asks. So we ask with him and await an answer. Verse 1. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. Forsaken, abandoned. It's a formidable feeling. Why are you so far? Why don't you answer? The silence from God makes it that much harder. Call emergency, no one picks up. My sense here is that David is only beginning to connect with the vision ahead. I think he feels this in his own life, but in that feeling, he begins to connect with a story he does not yet understand, and he struggles with the feeling. It doesn't seem right. It shouldn't be like this. Why? Verse 3. Yet you are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the one Israel praises. The reason it doesn't make sense is that I know who God is. You are the Holy One. In verse 4, in you our ancestors put their trust. They trusted and you delivered them. To you they cried out and were saved. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. 3 times he says trust. There is no hurt so personal as broken trust. And David feels that from God. And it doesn't make sense. Generations of ancestors trusted you and you came through. David's identity is built on his trust in God. Why, God? Verse 6. But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by everyone, despised by the people. It is here that I believe David's vision becomes vivid. He's there, feeling it, and what he feels is scorn. People looking at him like he's less than human, like he's a worm to be crushed. Verse 7. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord, they say. Let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. the crucifixion scene is growing clearer. Insults fly at him. Mockery is a subtle yet insidious weapon. It shouldn't hurt, but gets under your skin. The cruel words attack his identity. He trusts the Lord. David feels it. Jesus feels it. David tries to pull himself out, tries to reason with God. Verse 9, "Yet you brought me out of the womb. You made me trust in you." In other words, "I didn't just make this up, God. You did this. I trust you because you made me trust you. My whole life you've been my God. Now where are you?" Verse 11, "Do not be far from me, for trouble is near, and there is no one to help." The darkness is close now. No help, and David feels it all closing in. From his words, I see David fully immersed now, experiencing it all with Jesus. Verse 12, "Many bulls surround me, encircle me." His words now are dread, terror. He describes it like facing a lion, mouth open, ready to slice through his flesh. Trapped. 14, "I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint." He's desperate, powerless. During his trial, Jesus took a beating that killed many men. Upon the cross, every last bone feels it, dislocated. David feels it. "My heart has turned to wax. It has melted within me." David is a warrior. His heart pumped enough courage through his veins to take on any foe. But now, it's like wax melting in a fire. Emptied, lost, hopeless. Mouth dried up, tongue stuck. In verse 15, "You lay me in the dust of death." "That's it, God. I'm done." But it's not done. It's worse. "Dogs surround me. A pack of villains encircles me. They pierce my hands and my feet." Amidst the swirling emotions of dread and desperation, a sharp pain rings out. Hands pierced. Feet pierced. This is crucifixion. This is Jesus. 17. "All my bones are on display. People stare and gloat over me." Look at the words. On display. People staring. Worse, gloating. Why? The vision is sharper now. Shadows find clarity. David sees it. Verse 18. "They divide my clothes among them and cast lots for my garment." What an odd and striking detail to include. David sees it, feels the indignity, like that's the only bit of him worth saving. The man, worthless. David sees that clarity 1,000 years before it happened. We have a copy of this text from the Dead Sea Scrolls. But in verse 19, David's words lift from the scene back to God. "But you, Lord, do not be far from me. You are my strength. Come quickly to help me. Deliver me from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dogs." His words now are about saving. Deliver me. Rescue me. Watch the order. It's reversed. Rescue me from the dogs, the lions, the wild bulls. He's lifting out of it now. And notice the word choice. Help, deliver, rescue, save, salvation words. Then in verse 22, salvation turns to praise. "I will declare your name to my people. In the assembly, I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, honor him." 24, "For he has not despised or scorned the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry for help." David is renewed. And watch his words. In verse 6, he was despised and scorned, but not now, not by the Lord. The Lord listened. He is not forsaken. And David sings. 25. "From you comes the theme of my praise in the great assembly. Before those who fear you, I will fulfill my vows. The poor will eat and be satisfied. Those who seek the Lord will praise him. May your hearts live forever." David's heart is restored. Strength returns to his bones. Courage floods his veins. And in verse 27, his vision expands. All the ends of the earth will remember and turn to the Lord, and all the families of the nations will bow down before him. For dominion belongs to the Lord, and he rules over the nations. What a transformation! David is taken from the crucifixion to the very ends of the earth, to distant peoples turning to the Lord, bowing before him. Somehow this suffering leads to God's reign. Verse 29, all the rich of the earth will feast and worship. All who go down to the dust will kneel before him, those who cannot keep themselves alive. Now there's quite a phrase, those who cannot keep themselves alive. All the living, all the dead, kneel before the Lord, and all in response to a vision of suffering, of pierced hands and pierced feet. Verse 30, posterity will serve him. Future generations will be told about the Lord. Now that's some audacity, David. The ends of the earth, future generations. Who makes a claim like that? But here we are, 3,000 years later, 150 generations come and gone, and we're reading this psalm and sharing the story of the cross in every corner of the planet. Amazing. And one more verse. They will proclaim his righteousness, declaring to a people yet unborn, he has done it. And that's our job, to proclaim it. He has done it. The word done is the same word for finished. It is finished.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.